Klaus.
Thank you, Robert. It is our great honor to have as our guest today the conductor of this program, one of the most distinguished musicians of our time, Raphael Kubelik. As we talk, it is just an hour or so ago that the artist was presented by the mayor with the key to the city of Cleveland in recognition of his great contribution to Czechoslovakian culture in this country. Mr. Kubelik, this is your second visit to the city. The first, I believe, was in 1971.
That's
Have
correct.
You developed a special attachment to this area and its music and its people?
I should say so. I love it here because, first of all, I have recollections of my youth. Cleveland was one of my first cities when I visited this country with my father in 1935. And I remember playing in the seventh hall for him on the piano. So these, of course, these moments when you are 20, you can't forget. And the second thing is that, of course, I knew very well Mr. Sell, whom I admired. And I always was longing to meet one day this wonderful orchestra, which finally came to a realization.
Much delayed.
Well, I'm, you know, it is a real joy. It is such a superb instrument that every conductor must cherish it and must really love it and must not only fall in love, but also deeply carry it through his life. To that sound, which is specifically a Cleveland orchestra sound, is unique.
You and find it different from other orchestras?
Yes, it is very refined, and I find it on these rehearsals, which I have done now with the Bruckner, I find it a tremendous inspiration and source of beauty.
You mentioned your father. That, of course, was the great violinist Jan Kubelik,
yes.
A famous artist of his time.
He was.
And you played piano for him.
Yes, I toured with him in America for 18 months in 1935 and 36, playing all over the states up to, we came also to California and of course to South and West and Chicago and in New York and all over these places and of course Cleveland. In those days, Mr. Rozhinsky was the conductor.
Yes. Yes, we do have something about this, that you did these accompaniments, but we didn't mention Severance Hall specially. Shortly after you were here last, in 1971, it was announced that you would become the music director of the Metropolitan Opera in the fall of 1973 as the first artist ever to hold that specially created post. How do you see your function in that position as it differs, let's say, from the general manager?
Yes, it is a function which we have in Europe. A musical director in an opera house is a usual figure. And he deals with all artistic, musical necessities of the house. And, of course, he builds up the program with the general manager and selects the singers and selects the casting and the producers and, of course, the directors also. And he's responsible, so to speak, 50-50 of the whole daily agenda, too. He is not making himself, perhaps, the administration. That's why the general manager is there. But he certainly deals with the conscience, I would call it the artistic and musical conscience of the house. He has to supervise, he has to listen, he has to see what's going wrong. Especially that is the most important thing. What's going well, it's not, that's okay. But what's going wrong? And then he has to criticize and he has also to try to make a policy of artistic progress.
So if you, let's say, you say you want to have such and such a singer, and the general manager says he's too expensive, then what happens?
Then we fight. Then we fight, and whoever wins, won. But certainly if we can't convince each other, then we have to drop a certain case. I mean, that is a fact. But usually these things don't happen like that.
So actually the situation is very much like that in an orchestra where you have a manager and you have a music
yes,
director.
Yes, exactly. And you get in on people who are reasonable, you get always on a good term of goodwill further. I believe that in every house there are difficulties, but with goodwill one can solve all the problems.
Well.
Not all, but most of them, let's say. And the main thing is what I believe in, to have principles, to have certain principles on which you can really build your whole system. A principle, for instance, like we have done at the Metropolitan now, not to make too many titles a year. From 27 we went down to 22 so that we can rehearse better. The second principle is to have a cast the whole year round, at least 1 year, the same cast for an opera, especially new productions. In the repertoire pieces, of course, it's not so important, but then in the contrary, that's again interesting in a Butterfly and a Rigoletto to have different casts sometimes. But in new productions, especially in also in modern works and in classical works, it is good to have one season through with one cast, and then the next season perhaps even the same cast with little changes. And in no ways a conductor should change his opera. Once he gets his opera, he should maintain it at least for 3 years, so that the tempi don't change, and you know the whole build up of a new production doesn't change. That is a principle. Then the principle is also to make ensemble work with stars. And I'm sure that this is possible because the stars are not so that they wouldn't like to rehearse. In the contrary, my experiences from past were very good with big singers who wanted to rehearse really.
What you're really doing is what Gustav Mahler did in Vienna 70 years ago.
Well, he was a model, of course. He was a fantastic man, and whether we can achieve that much, but that is almost a dream.
The ensemble with stars.
But he was a fantastic man, and he was a powerful and strong man.
Of course, as your position doesn't officially begin until the fall, but you've obviously been very active in it already.
Since in the last 18 months, I was working, so to speak, from the backstage.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about your present orchestra, the notable Bavarian Radio Orchestra of Munich. What is a radio orchestra?
It's a normal symphony orchestra. We have 114 people. It's a normal big orchestra like any philharmonic orchestra in Europe. But in our case, we play, we have concerts, we have 12 double concerts. We play always in the official big hall of Munich, the Hercules Saal, which is the best hall in Munich. We never go to any studio, we play always there. And also those so-called tapes, which we are making for the radio, are made there in the hall. So we are functioning like a normal symphony orchestra, also traveling around. And it's just that the money is coming from both sides. It's coming from the radio, and also from the country.
In this country, this is not so common anymore. The NBC Symphony used to be a part of the NBC radio system, as well as playing live concerts. But in Europe, this is apparently very common.
It's very common, yes.
Yeah, like the BBC Symphony,
exactly,
which also performs live.
Exactly.
Now, your attachment to the music of Bruckner is a very deep one, and in Germany, I am sure this is accepted as a matter of course. But does it surprise you that in the United States, the response to that composer's symphonies has grown so in enthusiasm?
I'm happy to hear that, because it was always my love, and when I was in Chicago in the 50s, remember, in 51, 52, 53, I have played at least one symphony a year by Bruckner, always, and in those days it was also started to be already a normal affair. So the more you play him, the richer you become.
The battle seems to have been won.
And
by
inner, your inner life becomes richer, because it is a composer who brings you the beauty and brings you the strength and the belief in humanity.
It's very symbolic and very beautiful that you have dedicated these performances to the memory of your colleague, István Kertész. Would you like to take the opportunity to say a few words about that?
It is unbelievable. I was distressed when I heard it. It is an unbelievable tragedy. And it's so sad to see that the best people are going, you know, from our community. We need people of his stature and of his also in, of his belief in music. He was a real, when one can say the word, servant of music. He didn't use music for his own purpose, for his own private purpose, but he served music as a real musical adept.
Yes, he was a wonderful man. We loved him very much here. The orchestra was always happy to see him.
Yes.
And to think of a life that is not completely fulfilled is shocking.
It is shocking.
I mean, if a man leaves us in his 80s or 90s, that's one thing, but this is sad.
Yeah, very, very tragic.
Just last year, he won the Bruckner Medal of the Bruckner Society, so this is very appropriate that you are dedicating the performances to him. Mr. Kubelik, next week you will be doing a program with us that includes works by Smetana and Janáček. Do you feel a special responsibility toward the music of the country that you left in 1948?
Of course. Not only that one would do it from a nationalistic point of view, I'm far from that, but I think that the genius of Janáček, for instance, which was not recognized, say, 20 years ago, still in that way as we wanted to have it, is coming now so clearly to humans' private lives. The public and the individual who goes to an opera performance, for instance, feels suddenly the strength of the drama much closer through Janáček's music than perhaps he ever felt before. I have experienced it in London or in Germany or in München also. People who knew operas before and other composers, which are great, of course, but suddenly they got a completely new outlook, you know, of the drama, what is happening on the stage through Janáček.
Are you planning to bring one to the Metropolitan?
I'm planning it, but I can't speak about the season set. I had an interview in New York just the other day, and we announced only the first season. In the first season, there is no Janáček. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to anticipate.
Because the famous one was Yennefer.
That was a famous one. Yes. But he has others. He has from the Dead House, for instance, after Dostoevsky.
Little Vixen.
And the Katya Kabanova, which is a beautiful work.
Macropolis Affair.
Macropolis, yes. That was performed in New York.
Yes, it's you have recorded, of course, the Taras Bulba and the Sinfonietta, which is a magnificent piece.
And also the Glagolitic Mass, you know.
That is a
beautiful
work,
piece,
yes,
which I have recorded also. Yes.
And then you have also recorded the complete My Fatherland of Smetana, Mavlash.
Yes, Mavlast.
Mavlast, I have to pronounce it right.
Yes, exactly.
All the six great tone poems of which you are doing next week, number three, Sharka.
Yes.
That was for Deutsche Grammophon, I believe, with the Boston Symphony.
With the Boston Symphony, yes. I recorded it already three times. But, you know, I don't usually play only one of them. It is very seldom that I do it. Here it just was the right thing to do with the Taras combination, with the Taras Bulba. But otherwise, those six symphonic poems, they really should be played as a cycle.
These are both rather bloody stories.
Yes, too
Bulba
many. Too
and
have, yes, unfortunately. The second half of the program is a little bit on that side.
Is there, after Martinu, any Czech composer of consequence in whom you've taken any special interest?
Well, there are some younger composers, but I don't have any contact now with home, as you know. And there is not much. I don't think there's much done on this line. You know, the music is also directed, as in all these occupied countries. But. For instance, here in America lives a Czech composer, Husa, Karel Husa. He's a very good man.
You've seen some of his scores.
Yes, he's an excellent.
His music for Prague is always a very successful piece.
And he's a fine composer. I respect him very much. He's a nice man also.
But in Czechoslovakia, you are not in contact with any of the younger men.
No.
It is sad sometimes to read in Czechoslovakian publication that you are no longer persona grata there.
Well, I'm proud of it.
Yes, I gathered that. But it is very confusing to read the reports of your activity there before, and now that
they don't they
regard
my name
it
at all,
as
yes,
no,
course,
they regard it as unpatriotic. We know differently. Mm-hmm. Well, if it isn't out of line, I would like to tell you that this orchestra always looks forward immensely to your visits, which really become very festive occasions. It's most kind of you to have joined us for this program. Our thanks now to Rafael Kubelik and back to Robert Conrad.